Reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, from the 11th chapter, entitled The Universal Form, text number 8. Na tumam sakshasi drastum anenaiva cha sakshusa divyam dadami te sakshu pasyami yogam maishvaram. Translation. But you cannot see me with your present eyes, therefore I give you divine eyes. Behold my mystic opulence. Purport. A pure devotee does not like to see Krishna in any form except his form with two hands. A devotee must see his universal form by his grace, not with the mind, but with spiritual eyes. To see the universal form of Krishna, Arjuna is told not to change his mind, but his vision. The universal form of Krishna is not very important. That will be clear in subsequent verses. Yet because Arjuna wanted to see it, the Lord gives him the particular vision required to see that universal form. Devotees who are correctly situated in a transcendental relationship with Krishna are attracted by loving features, not by a godless display of opulences. The playmates of Krishna, the friends of Krishna, and the parents of Krishna never want Krishna to show his opulences. They are so immersed in pure love that they do not even know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In their loving exchange, they forget that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that the boys who play with Krishna are all highly pious souls, and after many, many births, they are able to play with Krishna. Such boys do not know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They take him as a personal friend. Therefore, Sukadev Goswami recites this verse. Itam satam brahma sukhanu bhutya dasyam gatanam paradevatena maya sitanam naradara kena shakam vijaru kritapunja punja. Here is the Supreme Person who is considered the impersonal Brahman by great sages, the Supreme Personality of Godhead by devotees, and a product of material nature by ordinary men. Now these boys, who have performed many, many pious activities in their past lives, are playing with that Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.12.11. The fact is that the devotee is not concerned with seeing the Vishvarupa, the universal form, but Arjuna wanted to see it to substantiate Krishna's statements so that in the future people could understand that Krishna not only theoretically or philosophically presented himself as the Supreme, but actually presented himself as such to Arjuna. Arjuna must confirm this because Arjuna is the beginning of the Parampara system. Those who are actually interested in understanding the Supreme Personality of God, Krishna, and who follow in the footsteps of Arjuna should understand that Krishna not only theoretically presented himself as the Supreme, but actually revealed himself as the Supreme. The Lord gave Arjuna the necessary power to see his universal form, because he knew that Arjuna did not particularly want to see it, as we have already explained. Arjuna is known as Savya Sachin in the Bhagavad Gita. That means he is the instrument of the Lord. Arjuna is not just some ordinary person, a person who is following his own mind, his own senses. Arjuna is a person who simply acts according to the desire of Krishna and puts everything else aside. Even when it is difficult, and even when he has to conquer his mind and senses, he's willing to do so. And therefore Krishna showered him with endless blessings. And ultimately, Krishna began to reveal himself to Arjuna. And that, of course, is the greatest blessing. Because there is no greater blessing than to see Krishna. Therefore, we can earn blessings by our devotional service. What blessings could we get? Bless you with good health, okay. Bless you with wealth, okay. Bless you that everything, that all people will be nice to you. Fine, very nice. But even if all the people are nice to us, and there's no Krishna, so what? Empty life. Yes. Even with all the wealth, empty life. Even with all the comforts, empty life. Therefore, a devotee desires the blessings to be in the association of Krishna, to be allowed to serve Krishna, to somehow or other see Krishna. Therefore, Arjuna very much wanted to see Krishna. But then he asked to see the universal form. So this seemed to be out of character, because Arjuna already knew that Krishna was the Supreme Lord. That was already clear before the battle of Kurukshetra. That was already long established. Arjuna, he knew that Krishna was the Supreme Lord. Then Arjuna knew that when Krishna was his chariot driver, that he was the Supreme Lord. Still, Arjuna wanted to see Krishna display it. Because Arjuna had a desire to proclaim Krishna's glories throughout the world. A devotee is not only interested in seeing Krishna himself. Of course, a devotee wants to see Krishna. But not only does he want to see Krishna, he wants everyone to see Krishna. He wants the whole world to see Krishna. And therefore, Yudhisthira, the elder brother of Arjuna, performed the Rajasuya sacrifice. It was a sacrifice that could be performed by a powerful king, and basically it meant the coronation of that king as the emperor. So Yudhisthira performed that sacrifice, but he used it that during that sacrifice Krishna was being glorified as the Supreme Lord in front of everybody. That was his real purpose for the sacrifice. That was why he did it. So that the whole world could hear, yes, Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So this is the nature of a devotee. A devotee wants the whole world to know, everyone, to know the glories of Krishna. Because the pure devotee is paradukaduki. He is feeling the suffering of other living beings. He is compassionate. And he understands that in the absence of Krishna, there is only suffering. Sugar-coated suffering and straight suffering. But suffering nonetheless. Suffering from acute agony or suffering from emptiness. What's wrong? Nothing. Can you point out anything that is not right? No? Then why are you not happy? The emptiness of a life without Krishna is also suffering. So in this way we see sugar-coated suffering or suffering in its raw form. The pure devotee in compassion wants others to know Krishna, because nothing can satisfy the heart. Savai punso paro dharmo yato bhaktira dakshite aitikya patiyata yayatma supasidati. Only pure devotional service to Krishna can actually satisfy the heart. Nothing else. So in this way, Arjuna had that desire, the desire for the world to know the authority of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna particularly inspired Arjuna from within to become the calf. It is said, Sarva Upanishad Gavo Dutta Kupala Nandana Parthavatsa Sudhir Bhakta Gitam Ritam Maham Namyat. It's said of all the that the Upanishads are just like a herd of cows, and that of all these cows, the Gita Upanishad, and Gita is sometimes also called Upanishad because it's in the form of an Upanishad. It's not an Upanishad, but it is built up like in the same way as the Upanishads. So therefore it is said, therefore compared to an Upanishad, compared to a herd of cows, then it said, yes, the Gita is the best of that herd of cows. Arjuna is the calf, the wise man, the enjoyer. And in this way, one can milk the nectar of the Bhagavad Gita. So that was Arjuna's particular role to act as a spiritual master in this way. That through Arjuna, through the questions of Arjuna, this transcendental knowledge was revealed for generations to come. And if any doubt would be cast upon the authority of the Bhagavad Gita, then this 11th chapter, then this universal form, which was displayed by Krishna. And Krishna took that form with unlimited arms, unlimited faces and mouth and so on, unlimited eyes. And Arjuna was overcome by that form, ghastly form, too much, overpowering form. That form was showing how all the heroes of the Battle of Kurukshetra were being devoured in the many mouths of the universal form. It's too much. So Arjuna desired to see Krishna's original form. Then Krishna took a four-armed form. But then he took the two-armed form. So in this way, just to make very sure with whom we are dealing. Because if he would have shown only the universal form, some might have said, yes, well, Arjuna, he had some vision. He had some vision and he saw all these heads. It was an amazing vision, but it was a vision. You may say it's the Supreme Lord, but, there's no evidence of that. It was just a vision. But then, when that same form transformed into four arms, oh, one, two, three, four, what can we say now? Four arms means Narayan. And that's one. No one can argue. So, all right, then he is Narayan. Okay, then he is Narayan. And then, two-armed form. All right, that's his original form. Yes. But, non-different. Non-different. So then the divinity of Krishna is thoroughly established. Arjuna didn't need it for himself. Arjuna was aware. Arjuna knew very well that Krishna was the Supreme Lord. Still, when he was confronted with that majesty of the Supreme Lord, he was for a moment overwhelmed by it and said, and how could I treat you like my friend and lie down on the same bed with you and all these things? Right. Forgive me for this. The Krishna takes no pleasure in formal relationships. Krishna takes greater pleasure when he is chastised, rather than listening to the Vedas being recited, Krishna is much more pleased with the chastisement, maybe, of his mother or of the other residents of Vrindavan. That pleases him more. Because it is more intimate, and it is more directly, dealing with him. So Srila Prabhupada also is turning to that when he describes the cowherd boys and describing this famous Krita Punya Punja verse, which is saying that these boys, what pious activity did they have performed? Countless of pious activities that now they're playing with the Supreme Lord. How is it possible? That the Supreme Lord agrees to play, agrees to limit himself like that. I mean, like, you know, how can you play with Krishna? You know, you play with Krishna and with mystic powers, he can always win. But Krishna arranged it all. There is the yogamaya potency of Krishna. And Krishna himself is also covered by this yogamaya potency. So yogamaya rules in these Vrindavan pastimes. Because the devotees are covered by yogamaya and forget that Krishna is God. And he even himself forgets his divine powers at times. Not all the time, but sometimes. Just so that when some cowherd boy comes up from the back, covers his eyes and says, "Who am I?" that Krishna cannot say, "I am the all-knowing Supreme Personality of Godhead. Give me a break, you know. How can you ask me such a question? I know everything." No, he doesn't know. Yes, who am I? Srino? No, Subal. Subal. Why didn't I think of Subal? So Krishna also agrees to be limited. So that is wonderful, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes down. He comes down to the level of his devotee. He stops being all-powerful, although he is all-powerful, but for the sake of relationship, he's not all-powerful, because how can you have a relationship with someone who's all-powerful when you're not all-powerful? It's just impossible. You know? So in this way, Krishna very intricately provides for relationship. Relationship is the essence of the spiritual world. It is the governing factor in the spiritual world. In the material world, it is said that everything is controlled by time. Time. So ultimately, time rules. Although relationships, relationships may mean a lot to us. Time destroys them. Time separates people. Time. All disappears. Time. Time wipes out everything in the material world. But in the spiritual world, time is absent and relationship is the key. Rasa is the key. That is the essence of everything. So Krishna is in this way absorbed in the relationship with his devotee. The devotee is always the servant. That is not not beginning here and ever ending. We will always remain the servant. Never will there be a time that we will not be servant. But we can serve in various ways. Nanda Maharaj gets Krishna to carry his shoes on his head. Krishna carries them on his heads. Can you bring the shoe? Yes. On his head. Oh, look at this boy. He's so nice. But all their energy is for Krishna's well-being, and ever they serve. That's simply the motto of devotee. Everything for Krishna, and nothing for me. And in this world, we divide. How much for me, how much for Krishna. And this battle remains. How much for myself, how much for Krishna. And it seems reasonable also. It seems reasonable. Now I need to take time for myself. It seems reasonable. But we see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was having a different approach. His approach was, when he came to Vrindavan, he was just, we're seeing Krishna. And he jumped in the Yamuna. And then that was perfection, to be in the Yamuna. So his servant had to pull him out of the Yamuna so that he wouldn't drown. Why go out of the Yamuna when you're in the Yamuna? Because you might drown anyway. Who cares about that? It's in the Yamuna. In the Yamuna. Perfection attained. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his ecstasy, could no longer keep that balance. He couldn't keep a balance. He was no longer trying to keep a balance. He was just wholeheartedly giving everything for Krishna. And we see this in great Vaishnavas who don't want to be balanced. I mean, it sounds revolutionary, I know. I like that, to say something revolutionary, otherwise it gets so boring. And the whole world is always talking about how important it is to be balanced, and the key to life is to be balanced, and so on. But mind you, you see in these acharyas, in these great pure devotees, behavior that's not always balanced, right? They just completely go for Krishna, no longer calculating the material consequences of that. Krishna, everything for Krishna, and also no longer caring. I still like Madhavendra Puri, who refuses to work, and even who refuses to beg. Who comes to the conclusion, if Krishna, whatever Krishna desires, whatever is his plan, if his plan is that my body stays alive, it will stay alive. If his plan is that my body will die, then it will die. Okay? So why would I make all these artificial arrangements to try and keep it alive? And therefore, I will suddenly... It's nice, of course, but how could I take away time from chanting Hare Krishna? So I will only chant Hare Krishna. And then if I die, I die. If I stay alive, I stay alive. And so everything started working fine. I mean, people started to bring things to eat, and he was living like that. And finally, Krishna himself came also and brought him something. So in this way, we see how these devotees, they did not care about material well-being, and apparently were not acting in a balanced way. But one is never acting imbalanced, right? If one is putting Krishna's interest first. But one must... be able to stay on the transcendental platform and cannot artificially imitate. For the conditioned devotee, yes, being balanced is very important. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is speaking about Varnashram. The conditioned devotee needs to think
what is suitable for me, what is the right position. Srila Prabhupada describes in the 8th canto, in that story of the elephant Gajendra, who actually was none other than Maharaj Indrajumna, who had been cursed to become an elephant. Anyway, that elephant was attacked by a crocodile in a big fight. And although normally an elephant is much more powerful than a crocodile, in the water the fight was going on, and the crocodile had food, whereas the elephant didn't. So with time, the elephant became weak, and the crocodile kept his strength. Therefore, in the end, the crocodile was winning. Srila Prabhupada, in the purports to that narration, is speaking about that one must choose a position where one is strong. In the fight with Maya, one must position himself in a position where he is strong, so that one can deal with Maya. So this is important, it's a fact. But the fight with Maya is there. So, all right, we can be balanced, we can consider our natures, we can consider what we have to achieve in Krishna consciousness and find the right balance between them, nature and the goal. Not just nature. You know what I mean? What's the use of your nature, right? You know what I mean? Who cares about your nature? The monkeys also have a nature. Right? Everybody has a nature. But somehow or other we have to connect that nature with Krishna and adjust it. Right? Adjust that nature so that from whatever our nature is, we are in the strongest position to serve Krishna. That's being balanced. But then at one point, as one becomes more and more absorbed in serving Krishna, then one day say, I'm tired of all this being balanced. Let's just do anything and everything. Right? For Krishna. And let's just carry on. If Prabhupada would have been balanced, would he have left at age 70? All the people would have said, that's not a good idea. They said, Srimati Maharaji said, Swamiji, you are an old man. Swamiji, I cannot let you go. You will die. You will die. Swamiji, you are like my father. How can I let you go? Then he took advantage. I'm your father. Oh, you are you. She's trying to get protective about her father. So, oh, I'm your father. You're refusing the request of your father? He turned it around and put pressure on her. And finally, she said, yes, all right, I will make arrangements for your passage. And he did have heart attacks on the way. It wasn't balanced anymore. It was just such a strong desire to please Krishna, ignoring any material consideration, just that desire to please Krishna. It's like, well, what to do? We have to take the risk. We have to somehow or other do it. Krishna will protect. And he did. Krishna came. And Prabhupada was extremely ill after the heart attack. And Krishna came and was rowing a boat and saying to Prabhupada, don't worry. Everything will be fine. And the sea was more calm than ever. It was, the captain said, oh, you must come back with us. You know, we never had such an Atlantic crossing, ever. That was the best ever. Yeah, we must come back. Prabhupada did not come back as yet. So, taking risks, risks for Krishna, is also there. So both we can consider now, being balanced and taking risk. Not advocating one over the other. I'm just saying at one point, one wants to take a risk for Krishna, one must take a risk for Krishna. If we never take a risk for Krishna, then also, yeah, what will we gain? And what will we gain if we just wait carefully? Well, the first risk is that we must give up taking shelter of the mind and the senses. They push Vajavega Manasakarodavega. They push us again and again. They push us to do so many things, and we simply do what Krishna wants. That is really the first thing. Everything else is preliminary, right? Really. Yeah. It is preliminary. We must be brave in this regard. That must be really in the foreground, because that is the difference between Kanista and Madhyam. The Madhyam is fixed in determination. The intermediate devotee fixed in determination. Neophyte devotee, weak and thin. I'm trying. Trying means I'm not doing. But I'm trying. That's nice. That's okay. But better is to do it, just to say. Therefore, if someone says, "I'll try," then you know that they actually say, "Can you do this? I'll try." It means I won't do it. Yeah. It means I'm not going to. Or I can say, like, maybe they'll do it. Maybe. But I'll keep the back door open, just in case it's too much. No, at one point we can't do that, because we don't know. We don't know how many lifetimes it took to get where we are now. See, somehow or other, we're here. And here's the opportunity. Take it now. Yeah, I want to, but I find it very difficult to actually stretch my arms and receive it, you see. But I want to. Yes, but so many lifetimes have passed, and now we are missing this opportunity. Who knows? If again next life, same opportunity comes, maybe not, maybe many lifetimes. So in this way, one must think, therefore, we must take full advantage with this kind of strength, this kind of eagerness. It was easier socially when Prabhupada was present, because eagerness is natural in a movement that is young and fresh. And eagerness is natural when everything is just new. Now, there are so many Hare Krishnas with gray hairs and lines in their faces, and they've been around for a long time, and you know, they have come down to the level of reality. That kind of situation where you go down the path and where a highway robber appears on the road, attacks you, and you look him in the face only to see that it's you yourself. Oh my God. And yes, this stage where you meet yourself and where you are actually the very cause of not being able to go any further on the spiritual path. It's you yourself who makes you trip on the path, that one. So everyone's scared that may happen if I get too renounced, too quick, too determined, too quick, too surrender, too quick, take on too much, too quick, then, you know, good chance that someday, one day, you'll come around the corner. Here I am. Oh, God, oh, no, not you. Go away. That's the nature of the struggle with the mind and senses, we know. So we're afraid. But then, you know, like there is an Arjuna who is not afraid, and that's why he's famous. He's famous because he's not afraid to adjust his life according to Krishna's will. And he stands as our role model. For us also, that we ought to become like Arjuna. At least I'd like to. I like to think of myself like that. It feels good to think of myself like that. Not that I really want to be like Arjuna. That might be a bit too much. But so, one must consider that we can take some risk for Krishna. It's interesting to see, yeyatamam prabhadyante tamstataiva bhajami, as you surrender unto me, I will reward you accordingly. That's what's going on. Many devotees are described who did great service, great sacrifices, and they were all receiving different rewards. And there is no limit to this. There's no like stereotype level. You see all the examples of all the pure devotees and you follow in the footsteps, but at the end of the day, everyone can for himself like really extend himself as far as he wishes in serving Krishna. And that's like what we see in Prabhupada. Like Prabhupada just went, we don't know what Prabhupada did in previous lives. Well, there's a story where Prabhupada said that one astrologer had said that in a previous life he was a doctor and he was sinless. That was there. Then there's the story Avananda tells that Krishna asked him to come to the material world to preach. Oh no, I don't want to go. No. You can do it. I don't like austerity. Oh, that's all right. All you have to do is translate books. I will do the rest. So, okay, maybe we see Prabhupada as a resident of the spiritual world. But that doesn't mean if Prabhupada was a pure devotee, an eternal a liberated devotee from the spiritual world, that doesn't mean that in his life as Prabhupada on this planet he didn't make unlimited spiritual advancement. It was just amazing what he did, and he got the credit. It's not, well, he was already a Nietzsche Siddha, eternally liberated soul, so he just did all these things, that was all transcendental activity, natural. No. That was his choice. That was still his choice. He chose to do the impossible. He chose to make it so difficult. Because he did a lot of difficult things. He chose for it again and again. And wouldn't stop choosing for it. So his whole life stands to testify from that extraordinary sacrifice. And how he purchased Krishna. That is ultimately what counts. So nothing holds us back to all. So we don't have to just stay within sort of an idea of what a pure devotee is supposed to be is good enough. No, nothing. It's never good enough. It really, we need something more. So, recently we were in Radhadesh and we had this program with the Pandava Sena from England, the youth from England, and it was nice. So Chidananda Maharaj, myself, was sort of taking care. And then Bhakti Charu Maharaj also had a desire to come, so he came for a day. And you know, it's like, not just anyone. So when someone of that caliber comes, right, then everything gets adjusted, and the whole schedule was like upside down. And then we had this evening where it's okay, we'll just do a three swamis on the road type of program, which you sometimes do when you got too many of them. And so we did one like that, and then the idea was it would be a proper evening. So Bhakti Chumar started to speak and explained, you know, how Prabhupada at age 70 went on the Jaladuta to the Western world, and just a little bit like I just did it. And then he started describing how he was personally involved in taking care of Prabhupada in 1977. And then, in those days, Prabhupada was not well at all. And then, one day, Prabhupada asked for orange juice, and he didn't start at that very moment, you know what I'm saying, like orange juice. So after about a few minutes, Prabhupada goes, "Where's the orange juice?" Right? So it's like, well, it's just now coming to the Prabhupada, and he hadn't even started it, right? So, okay, he quickly left, went to make the orange juice. And then Prabhupada, as soon as he started to approach, the bell was already, there was an electric bell, and it was like ringing, and like the way it was ringing, the Prabhupada was angry, you know. Where is that? It was clear, where is the bell? It was like, where is the orange juice? And then when he appeared in the room, the Prabhupada was, thunder was coming out of his mouth. And it's like, you can keep your orange juice. I don't want your orange juice. This, that, and then Bhakti Charu Maharaj, because of his simple and pure heartedness and his loving nature, just went before Prabhupada, stood there, and just offered the orange juice. And Prabhupada just like, "Go away! I don't want that orange juice! Get out of here!" But he wouldn't go. And he stood there, "Please take the orange juice." So finally Prabhupada just took the orange juice, drank the whole thing, and cried. And then he said, "You're taking such nice care of me. You're tolerating so many things, you know." He said, like, you know, an old man sometimes becomes a little short-tempered. He said, so it's like quite a story, you know. I mean, really, like, how how his love, how he just, how his, you know, his dedication, his service attitude, how he conquered Prabhupada, and how Prabhupada conquered him, you know, by saying, you know, old man, sometimes short temper, but he drank it. So, very nice to see how in Krishna consciousness nothing is automatic. You know, it's not like, it's about conquering. We have to conquer Krishna. We have to conquer the spiritual master. I've often thought about this, you know, like, especially since I became a spiritual master, I thought about this question more. That is like, if someone does a service, right, and it's reasonably okay, am I then supposed to be pleased, yeah, and act pleased? Or am I supposed to be really pleased? There's a difference, you know what I mean? So it's like someone cleans the floor nicely, then I'm supposed to be pleased, so I'm very pleased. Say, I'm pleased. That's one level of being pleased. I'm pleased. But if, like, you know, somebody really, like, does something extraordinary, then, you know, I mean, like, wow, right? Then I'm really pleased. You know, so I often wondered, what should I be, you know? Should I just be, like, formally pleased? I'm pleased with your service. Please accept my blessings. Let's bless. And then you are blessed. But if one is really pleased, right, you just like that it bursts out of the heart. You say, like, then, you know, shower in blessings, then the blessings start ringing. That's, of course, the kind of pleased you want, right? Really, I mean, you know. We are pleased. It's nice, but it's not nice enough. So yeah, I thought about that. And I think that with that orange juice, Bhakti Chumaraj did it, and he did it by not going away. And it's not so easy, you know what I mean? When Prabhupada gets in like a thundering mood and like, take it away, and I don't want it. It's like, wow. Most people would put the tail between their legs and sort of get out of the way, you know. Wait till it's over, you know. Get out of the room and drink it themselves.
Just to cool back.
No, because he knew that this is good for Prabhupada. He needs that orange juice now. I know I'm too late. I'm sorry. But still, you should take the orange juice. That was nice. Conquered Prabhupada. And Prabhupada conquered him. So, this is spiritual. It is personal. Is all personal. Ultimately, if we want to go back to God, we have to conquer Krishna. What pious activities did these cowboy boys do? They conquered Krishna. How they did it. Well, okay, that's the hard part. And then there's the mercy part. I always have to bring in the mercy part also. Whatever we fall short, there is the mercy. But not first do nothing and then expect that the mercy will rain down. No, if we don't do much, then don't expect much mercy. Just like, you know, me also. Somebody who did, if I'm giving out cookies and somebody who did nothing, the one who did nothing gets a cookie also, but not the good one. The good one I can keep also for somebody good, you know. Or somebody good gets like a couple, you know. Somebody really good gets a whole handful, you know. like that. So Krishna is personal. Oh, very personal. I have to conquer his heart. That's what the Kaur boys did, and that's my meditation. Not qualified for that, but thinking about it. Of how I'm not like these Kaur boys. Alright. I make my return. I came to Stockholm only to crash from the bed to the sofa and the sofa to the bed.
Arjuna is the beginning of Parampara, and Sri Balaram is Adiguru. How is that?
There are many Paramparas. You know, it's not only one Parampara. So, you know, like Parampara, it all comes through so many personalities. So Arjuna is our Parampara. Yes, Balaram is Adi Guru. He's the original servant of Krishna. Balaram serves Krishna in so many ways. But Krishna reveals things through many servants, and Arjuna is one of them. So, the Bhagavad Gita. Balaram wasn't around. He went on a pilgrimage. He didn't like that battle of Kurukshetra. His friends were Duryodhana. Mysterious. Why Balaram's friends were Duryodhana, whose enemy he is. Mystery. But he went. Even taught him club fighting. So Balaram was not there at Kurukshetra. Balaram would have not controlled himself. He would have just, Balaram is not like Krishna. Balaram is a hot temper. Balaram can get angry. When Balaram gets angry, it's like, no, he doesn't care about etiquette or this or that. He's just like, So he would have lost it in Kurukshetra. Smash everyone. At the time the Kurus, were kind of Samba, right? Was it Samba? Yeah, who took the wife of the daughter of Lakshmana? Was it Samba or was it the daughter of Duryodhana was named Lakshmana? Was it Samba who took that one?
Anirudha.
Okay, Anirudha. I was trying to remember who it was. Was it Anirudha? Sure.
Samba was the one with the iron.
No, that's okay. Yeah, but we're not sure if it's Anirudha. That's okay. We have to look it up. You might be right.
Yes.
I'm bamboozled your memory.
The daughter of Duryodhana was named what?
Lakshmana.
She was... I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm also... Okay, she's here. Whatever, we'll look it up. Tomorrow. Confirm it. Save it for tomorrow. Anyway, Balaram is hot-tempered. So he wasn't there. Kurukshetra. Stayed out of the way. Right, yeah.
That's a different.
Yeah. Anirudha and Ushi. Yeah, he's right. Yeah. But we'll come to it. We're gonna look at it later on electronically. Okay, well, if you look it up, who was with... when Balaram was with his plow trying to pull the city of the Kurus into the river. That's what you're looking for. Any other question?
In this process of conquering spiritual master, what are the most important qualities for that? Is it like loyalty, dedication, or just doing something really extraordinary?
It's like in conquering the spiritual master, what are the most important qualities? Loyalty. Do you really have to do something extraordinary? I think that the first thing is genuine sincerity, and genuine sincerity means to not hold back. You know, I mean, we have our natures. Some people are meant to go out and conquer foreign lands, and others are meant to just faithfully worship the deities. It's about dedication. That it doesn't matter, you see, like the dedication will be tested again and again, whether you are trying to conquer new territories and, you know, make new devotees, or whether you just day in, day out, just do it. Do the same service in the temple. There will be tests, and that one throughout the test doesn't deviate. That's where sincerity is manifest. Ultimately, that's what it takes, sincerity. My look. Your sincerity, I think, is the real key. To not hold back. To not find some excuse. Is it okay? Do what I can within my... what I was asked to do, first of all. Devotional service. You cannot take, you know, just sometimes you can have some opportunity to take up some service on your own initiative, but first of all, devotional service is given. It's given to us. Yes. Then when we get more experienced in service, then sometimes we may ask for some service. Can I do that service? Or we can offer it. I want to do it. Like I was listening to Guru Kripa yesterday, his memories, I mean, somewhere. And Guru Kripa was describing how Prabhupada was ill, and how he was visiting Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was describing how much he was struggling. And he said, like, it's so difficult, you know, my health is not good. He said, like, you know, my feet are now swelling up, and my teeth are getting loose. He said, it's the first sign of death. He said, it's the beginning of death. He said that, but I have one desire. I have one desire. I have a desire to first finish Bombay. first Bombay, before before I leave this world. And it's like, and then somehow or other, said like, but he said like, you know, but it's not easy, you know, to get out. Where will I get the money? And it's like, and Prabhupada suggests some of my disciples have money, but they're not giving it to me. And then Guru Kripa said, don't worry, Prabhupada, I'll give you money. So don't worry, I'll give you money. I'll give you all the money you need. And then he had said it. You know? And you can see Prabhupada sort of leading up to it, you know, it's like, oh, some of my disciples have money, but they're not giving it to me. And sort of spontaneous, don't worry, Prabhupada. I'll give it to you. I'll give you money. And then, well, that's not much. I'll give you all the money you need, he said. Bang, and then he was like, the Prabhupada said, okay. And then suddenly, you know, suddenly he realized, oh my God, what did I just say? You know? And Prabhupada held him to it. And then that's how actually he started his whole collection. And you could see the super soul just like crept in. Made him say something, and just like, wow. But then he had to live up to it, and he did it. He did, you know, he lived up to it. He gave Prabhupada, at one point, Prabhupada wanted 100,000 a month, right? And he had to bring 100,000 a month. And Prabhupada was saying, I don't know where he's getting the money. Is he robbing banks? Is he dealing drugs? Yeah. Some are saying. Guru Kripa said, no, this wasn't true. I didn't do that. Anyway, it's nice. Nice to hear. So like that, you know, like, you're going to be tested. Yeah. Once you said, you're going to do it. So otherwise, service, we take the service that is given to us. And then we will be tested in that service. We just take it. But if you want to take up something ourselves, well, yes, yes, you do that, yes. But then you have to do it. Intense.
I was thinking of the example of one sincerity. So, not holding back. But we didn't do a big, like, what's the call of a Shashira?
Mm-hmm.
It was anonymous, not known to do any big service, but he didn't hold back. And Lord Chaitanya made everyone aware.
True. Selling banana leaves and this, that, and Lord Chaitanya would come every day and just. He was such a poor man. He said, you know, in India, you're selling some leaves, and you're making it into cups and plates, and you have to live from that. It means you have nothing. You're poor. And then Lord Chaitanya would come every day as a Brahmana. You should give it to me. I'm a Brahmana. You should just donate it to me. You know, no, I'm not paying. You know, you have so much wealth anyway. You just take it away. And he just carried on, and then from whatever he earned, the little bit that he did earn, he spent 50% on the worship of the Ganga. Sincere. Not holding back.
Yeah.
I have a general question about Bhagavad Gita. I mean, in the Mahabharata war, Kurukshetra, Arjuna actually was not willing to participate because he was against killing his own people. But based upon the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gave advice that it is nothing wrong to participate in this war, and it's not wrong to kill our own people because you are ultimately killing the body of the people, not the soul.
Uh-huh.
So I have this question that, I mean, can such teaching will help to maintain the peace and humanity
Of course, the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna began to explain that Arjuna had to fight, he did not only say to Krishna, but to Arjuna, that you have to fight. He first said to Arjuna that he had to do his duty. Arjuna already knew what his duty was. He knew he had the duty to fight. Because the Kurus, they had taken the land back inappropriately. They had denied them what was their right, you see. So they were not upholding Dharma. They were acting in an adharmic way. So therefore Arjuna knew, I have to fight for the reasons that I have to protect Dharma. Yeah, that he knew. But he didn't want to, because he thought there are special circumstances, because now there is the family situation. How can I fight within my family? So therefore he said, I will not fight. But he knew what his duty was, to uphold the principles of Dharma. And then he said, like, why would I fight anyway? Because I don't want a kingdom anyway. Why do I want a kingdom? I don't need a kingdom. But Krishna pointed out, no, you must fight. Because ultimately it's not that you must have the kingdom, but the kingdom must be ruled by one who is righteous. So those who are not adhering to Dharma, they are not righteous. So how can they rule? Therefore, that battle had to happen, and Yudhisthira had to become the emperor, because he was righteous. He was always following Dharma, so that the ruler will uphold Dharma and that all the people will follow Dharma. That was the real reason behind it. Not just, yes, you can go and fight, that is all right, you can kill everyone, because after all, they're not the body, they're eternal souls anyway, so no problem. You kill this one, you kill that one, they don't really die anyway. So you and me, we can go out into the street and we can kill a few people, they don't die anyway, no problem. Let's just kill them all, bang, bang, bang. No problem, they're not dead anyway, eternal souls. we can have some fun. Not in this mood. No. We should see that actually Arjuna already knew that he had this duty. But there were special circumstances. So it was in the family. That makes it more tough. His grandfather, this, that, his teacher. So yeah. Duryodhana was envious and not interested in Dharma. How could he be the ruler? How could he ever guide the people? A king has to teach the people. You have some governments, they seem to take care of the people, they seem to provide for the people, they don't seem to steal too much. So good government. We would say today, very good government. But not by the standard of the Gita. We'd say no. If they don't engage the people in religious practices, no good government. A secular government can never be a good government. What to do? So this is the degradation that we have in the world. So Arjuna, yes, he had a duty to help put a proper government in place. That was his job. So he had to fight.